You're listening to Bison Report Radio.
It's going to be interesting to see how Richmond wants to play this in terms of what he does. If he does want to go out and try to get some immediate help there.
The man, the myth, the legend, Greg Menard, rushing the passer from his right end position as a senior, and I think a legitimate National Defensive Player of the Year candidate.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio from Scout.com. Here's your host, Ryan Burns and Ross Uglum.
And welcome back to another episode of the BisonReport.com radio podcast. This being a breakdown edition as we look at another Bison football home victory, a 30-14 victory for NDSU over Northern Iowa over the weekend. So a lot to get into, including an exclusive interview with Ross Uglum, with the head ball coach for basketball. So we got a lot to dive into today. Joining me, as always, is the aforementioned Ross Uglum. Ross, how are things going for you today?
I am well. Excited to kind of break down a Bison victory over Northern Iowa. And it's Dakota Marker week, so it's difficult not to be pumped about what's going on.
I know we'll get into it a little bit more Thursday or Friday, but this is a South Dakota State team that really looks to have found it offensively of late, so it's going to be an interesting game for NDSU as they head on the road. But let's start with the news part of the podcast, Ross, and let's get into a little bit of an injury update, starting with, Lance will make them dance, Mr. Lance Dunn. Unfortunately for the brand, for the podcast, and for Lance Dunn himself, looks like he may be gone for an extended period of time.
Yeah, I would say a minimum of 6 weeks. That's what came out on Monday about Dunn. They called him week to week, I think, initially. And I believe that the further explanation, et cetera, would end up with the Seth Wilson red shirt getting pulled. I think that's kind of why this came out, because it was a weird situation. Wilson was in the game for one third down, and it's a kid that I think the staff is very high on and has a relatively high level of hype, being the featured back from last year's recruiting class. So blowing his redshirt for one play was probably not going to be a popular stance. And then, this news came, and they explained why they did it, and that is the torn labrum in Dunn's hip that I think is going to be a 6 to 8 week injury. No point in holding him out, though, if he can go. There's no way, with how much he's played this year, to get this year back. So Dunn would be a guy I would pay attention to maybe in the late part of the playoffs, certainly potentially available for a national championship game should they have the opportunity to play in one.
Well, my question to you would be then, with Seth Wilson's redshirt gone, I mean, are you expecting him to get 5 to 10 to 15 snaps a game? Is there a kind of a touch kind of workload you're looking for him to pick up now, or is it just kind of play it by ear throughout the rest of the regular season anyway?
Well, until they're healthier, I mean, he's going to have to play. They don't anticipate getting Cofield back this week, and we're going to get probably a decent look at Wilson because he would be the third back. They're not going to probably use one of the fullbacks or Dimitri Williams. They are going to end up using kind of a third true tailback instead of a positional convert. So I think you will see Wilson, especially while Cofield is limited. And Kleiman made it very clear that he also sees Wilson as part of the special teams group as well.
And the other news item to really get into injury-wise is the potential of Chris Board having a shot at playing, Ross, and that's big. And I know that you're going to want to get into this a little bit later, because of everything that's happening with Jabril Cox and his ejection. But what did Coach Kleiman say about the latest on Chris Board?
That he does feel like there's a chance he plays this weekend, which would certainly be big. I mean, Chris has been a contributor for NDSU for a long time, first at strong safety and then a strong side linebacker. And to get him back, especially in a situation where they won't have Jabril Cox, would be big, at least for the first half, excuse me.
All right, so in terms of recruiting news, Ross, not a whole lot to talk about in terms of when we talked last, but I do want to highlight a few different things. I don't know if we've mentioned it here on the podcast, but NDSU linebacker commit Mitchell Cartes from St. Michael Albertville unfortunately tore his ACL a few weeks ago, so he is going to be out for the rest of the season, obviously. And then you look at some of the other commits. From talking with other coaches around the region, I know that I wouldn't be surprised that after the season, if you see some renewed FBS interest in guys like Savion Clark, for obvious reasons there, he's NDSU's highest-rated commit. I also know that there are teams looking at Mr. Ogbu from out in Bismarck, the absolute freak, 6'6", athletic defensive end that NDSU has committed. And two other guys to watch are both Brian Nohava and Jalen Sundell, two guys I know that Coach Polisek down in Iowa now is keeping tabs on as well. But, Ross, do you want to set up your interview with the head ball coach?
Yeah, I had a chance to sit down with Coach Richmond, as I have had the chance to do for the last two seasons, and just talk about kind of the upcoming group. We discussed replacing Dexter Werner. We briefly discussed the Cabela's transfer. We discussed some scheduling stuff, but this will be part one of a two-part interview, and we're going to play part one for you right now. Here with Bison head coach David Richmond. Dave, how's it going?
Great, Ross. Good to see you again.
Yeah, so exciting time of year. Well, let's talk about last year briefly before we kind of get into the preview part of things. Midway point of last year, you guys are 16-6, first place in the league, finished 3-5 in the conference tournament, does not go well. What happened?
Yeah, I think for us, it's a bigger picture than just that season. You look back on how NDSU basketball was built up to the first group that went to the NCAA tournament and competed in the Metrodome against Kansas, that 2009 group, it was built up for that. And then there were some real sparse years post that. And then you turn around and you build it back up to 2014, and that's kind of been the track record of North Dakota State basketball, where it's been built up with a particular team. You know, what we've tried to do as a staff is really establish this as a program that's consistently buying for championships. In 2015, we were fortunate to do that. 2016, we were right back in that conference championship game. And then last year, we felt like we were in pretty good position, where from a standpoint where we're 7-1, we're leading the league, doing things well enough to win some games. But when you do some things like that and try to speed it up, you know your margin for error is a little bit slimmer. And, we just didn't, compete like the level that we had down the stretch. Certainly there's a high level of teams up and down the league. That certainly plays into account. You can see the changing landscape of the league with USD having more success, Omaha being a player. You go back to 14, you go back to 9, those guys were in their infancy of even being eligible. So, certainly didn't finish the way we wanted it to. Our expectations are to compete for Summer League championships year in and year out. But we need to find the silver lining and build off. You take a team like South Dakota State, where there was a part of the equation early in the conference season. They didn't even know if they were going to be in the conference tournament, but they kept building. They stayed the course, and they end up winning it too. So we need to make sure and position ourselves this year. So, it's not always the best team that wins. It's the team that's playing the best and that's the healthiest. And that's really our goal. That's really our focus right now.
A couple of your guys I had a chance to talk to, and they mentioned maybe conditioning or just being tired kind of at the end of last season, working on body comp with Coach Miller, working on their conditioning. Does any of that fall on you guys as a staff as maybe getting more guys in or redistribution of minutes as the season goes on?
I think you get comfortable with a certain level of guys and what they're going to bring you on a day in and day out basis. We had what I would consider an extremely tough off season going back to last spring, where we wanted to find out if you were interested. If you're interested, it wasn't going to work, or if you're committed. And if you're committed, the way we do things, you got a chance. And to our guys' credit, most importantly, those guys that were with us this spring, kind of came back as returners. I really found out their commitment level is high. They've answered the questions that we've asked them, and give them a ton of credit. Specifically to your question, too, there's 40 minutes in a game. With the media timeouts, there's some of those things that with the Division I athletes that we have and the way they're conditioned, the way they're prepared, they're good for their minutes. I think what we can maybe do a better job of is evaluate some things in practice on off days, pre-games, some of those things to make sure that our core guys that know what their rotation minutes are going to be are ready to go.
33 minutes a game, your starting point guard transfers out after two seasons. I mean, is that anything like anything you've dealt with before?
No. Probably the most disappointing act that I've been involved with is, you know, rounding into my fourth year as a head coach. And we pride ourselves in being committed. We pride ourselves in selflessness. And certainly those situations, you can read into that however you please. But we're, again, like I told you, I'm very, very excited about the commitment level, the toughness level, the togetherness level of our eight guys that returned and how they welcomed in six new guys.
Sounds like Paul might get the first crack at those minutes. Does your experience with Lawrence, and then even when you were on staff when Ben was there, is that going to help you when you have a point guard who's probably your number one scoring guy but also has to distribute?
I don't really get caught up too much into those finer details, too. We play a positionless brand of basketball. You go back and you look at our game at South Dakota State last year where we flipped it in the second half. Paul played a lot of point. You know, Jared Samuelson played some point. The way we push in transition, we have guards in Tyson Ward and Paul Miller that do a really good job rebounding, and they can initiate the break too. So certainly there's some question marks there. I'm well aware of that too, but I think we've got guys that have had a good amount of experience playing with the ball in their hand, playing with the ball in their hand late clock. I've been very impressed so far preseason with Cameron Hunter. We're going to have options there too. And I certainly get the significance of a point guard, a shortstop, a quarterback, all those things. But we've got guys that are fully capable of executing there.
Speaking of Paul, this is a kid who sat out at Summit League tournament game for discipline issues, and now he's taking the mic on tip-off night, and he's addressing your fans as a leader in this program. Just talk about how far he's come now that he's a senior.
Yeah, I got a text from my father, you know, a couple years back, and I saved it. You know, it talked about parenting and coaching is going to be the most challenging, but also one of the most rewarding things, probably the most rewarding thing that you're ever going to experience. And that would certainly be the case. I you know, Paul has certainly challenged me. I think he would tell you that I've challenged him. But I think through the course of this, we've both become better, and it's been very rewarding. That being said, as Paul being one of our only two seniors, he's still got to continue to grow and take some of that initiative to be a leader, to help others around him to make himself better.
You're going to get asked more than once this season about replacing Dexter Werner. Paul just gushed about Dylan and Spencer. What's that about, and who else might pitch in at the post?
Yeah, I think that's been, you know, you go back to 2014, you got five seniors. How are you going to replace them? You know, Taylor Braun's a guy that's been in NBA camps. You go back the next year, how are you going to replace Lawrence Alexander? We're right back winning 20 games, and we're in the Summer League Championship game. This is continuing to build and trend more and more like a basketball program. We're at an historical point. We're not trying to build a team. We're trying to build a program. I'm well aware, Ross, that we're not going to, you know, lift, place, and cut a Dexter Werner. Dexter was a talented guy that bled North Dakota State, green and gold. But I'm anxious to see how Dylan takes that next step. He's already done that transform in his body. Spencer's been good in practice. Can he do that when the lights come on? We're excited about a freshman in Rocky Cruiser. We'll see in the next couple of weeks how that situation plays out. But it's not even just that five position or the post position, so to speak. It's everybody around him too elevating their play.
With Paul, you guys are going with more of a position that's looking Paul maybe at the one. Do you see AJ as more of a wing maybe this year, or still going to play that four for you guys?
Yeah, I think the thing that I'm trying to stress to AJ, and that you'll hopefully see more of once AJ gets healthy, he's been banged up all fall here, is just less equals more for him. And just really defining some things, really giving him specifics. What AJ doesn't get enough credit for is the 95% of the game that really, you know, that has a major impact on it. Certainly scoring is a big, I get that. They're keeping score. And AJ's showing the capabilities of doing that, you know, throughout his career at a high level. He's already scored over 1,000 points. But AJ understands our system. He understands, you know, what it means to be in the program. He's a guy that is just a rock solid guy that defends better than you think, rebounds better than you think, you know, and plays off others within our offensive execution as well, too. So, I just from a familiarity standpoint, rounding into his fifth year now, we're not going to try to change a whole bunch of things that we're doing with him.
Dang's such a fan favorite because of his athleticism. Tyson showed he can bounce at the dunk contest as well. Both these guys look like they've really progressed physically. What can we expect in year two from these guys?
Yeah, those guys are the I think when you look at the level of basketball and you take a look at the what we're really close to around here is the Northern Sun. You know, the very, very good basketball players, execute guys, all that. And I think in a similar sense, we have some of those guys. But then you take a guy like Tyson Ward, you take a guy like Bangu that just has another level of length and athleticism that can spring you into some different things and different conversations. And you know, Dang's a guy that we've been pleased with. He's taken some very good steps defensively, understanding where we want him to be, when we want him to be there. Again, I think we all understand that this is, at this point in Dexter Warner's career, nobody had ever heard a minute about him. Okay, so again, as we build and trust the process as a staff, as a program, and within our guys. Again, it's still a process for Dang to learn on the floor when the lights come on and being able to slow down a little bit offensively, make some decisions. And that's on us, too, to keep it pretty simple for him, too. I'm very, very pleased, very, very excited, you know, with Tyson as he continues to mature and grow. I think he's got a chance to be a special player in North Dakota State.
Junior college, not normally a route that you guys take to acquire players. How much of that had to do with the attrition, surprise or not surprise, from last season? And how much just of it has to do with the type of players you think Namdi and Chris are, and can we expect to see them this season?
Yeah, I think, again, to go to your first point, Ross, if we're doing this exactly how we want to do it on a consistent basis, for the most part, we're recruiting upper Midwest high school kids. But you also look at, you know, the landscape of Division I college basketball is changing. And we're naive to think that there's not going to be some attrition, just what's happening. You look around the coaches that have been here before, what's happening in their program, even within our league. But what wins at mid-major basketball more often than not? It's experience. And both Chris and Namdi come in here not just as three-year junior college kids, but 2 years removed from high school. Namdi went to a prep school. Chris Gray shirted, you know, at a junior college. So those guys they're 20 years old, and you don't deal with some of the off the court, you know, immaturities. You don't deal with some of the off the court adjustments that you would with an 18 year old high school kid, so to speak. So again, those guys have come in and adapted really well. I think that's a big credit to them, but also their maturity level. And a guy like Chris Quayle is a guy, yeah, certainly you're going to see him. Chris really understands, you know, what to do, when to be, where he needs to be. He knows how to play. And as you see him progress every day in practice, he's starting to just relax and play a little bit more too. And Namdi, you know me, I'm a big fan of big guards. And Namdi's a big guard. And he's adjusting. I think, you know, the way his junior college was, they just played a million miles an hour and tried to outscore you. He's adjusting to how we want to play and how we want to execute within our system. And you know, he's really started to grasp a couple of those things here lately.
All right, let's get into it.
Yeah, let's do it. So, again, for folks who don't know, probably by the time you're listening to this, it may be Wednesday, November 1st, and just a reminder that Concordia Moorhead is going to be coming. You know, it's a home game. It's in terms of an exhibition game, so tonight – or Wednesday night at 7 p.m. If you want to get your first look at this NDSU team at 17-18, this is your first look opportunity. And a reminder as well, after this exhibition game, NDSU does not return home for another 3 weeks until they take on Florida A&M. So if you want to see this men's basketball team at 17-18, I recommend heading out to Fargo on Wednesday night at 7 p.m. So let's get into this Northern Iowa game. Again, a 30-14 victory. For NDSU, and the first thing, the A topic, is obviously always going to have to be quarterback. And Ross, I know that you tweeted about it quite a bit in terms of the progression, in terms of Easton Stick's passing ability as the game went on. And the A topic has to be, is Easton Stick healthy? I think there's a clear answer to that one. And how do you think NDSU proceeds here when you're heading in to a very important game against South Dakota State on the road next week?
I mean, it's something that I've been paying attention to since the Western Illinois game when he came down awkwardly at that sack, and you just saw some not great lower body fundamentals on some of the throws that he missed. I don't know if it's a plant foot issue, if it's just a sloppiness issue. I'm not sure, but you see the lower body shots he's been taking over the last 2 weeks. It makes sense to me, frankly, that it might be an injury issue. When you lose that plant foot, when you don't stride into your throws, The miss is high. It's something, honestly, too, that Carson Wentz struggled with in his career and last year in his rookie season, and something that he's been working on and certainly has improved on quite a bit this season. You see his turnover numbers down. You see Stick's turnover numbers down quite a bit this season as well. But after starting the first entire half of the season with no picks, he's got four in the last two games. I mean, it's just something to keep paying attention to. But mechanically, it's the back foot throws and sort of the side stride throws, as opposed to really transferring the weight from his front foot or from his back foot to his front foot and driving. That's when you see those high misses, and I think that's why you saw a low completion percentage and two turnovers against the University of Northern Iowa.
Well, you look at his day, 8 for 23 for 136 yards, two interceptions. I mean, I'd have to think you think he has better passing days ahead of him. On the ground, he goes 6 for 36. Again, is this going to be a kind of nagging injury for the rest of the schedule here? And, you know, what can this staff potentially do to try and get Easton Stick a little bit right?
Nothing. There's nothing they can do. Because, I mean, it's obviously not an injury where they're going to keep him out. So the only thing they can really do, I guess, is just manage it in practice. But at this point, to be honest, they're not really even acknowledging that it exists. So I don't know what the level of care that can be taken. Anyway, that's the deal. Really, I think, is going to be management in practice. But beyond that, I don't really know what they can do, because it's very clear that they're not going to cut his playing time. You're not going to rotate in at quarterback when you've got a guy that still appears to be more than capable of, you know, running in a straight line, or a guy that they still feel okay with running the football. I mean, I think he's fine. I think it's okay. It just crops up a little bit between plays and on a couple of throws. And then, you know, if there's no risk of re-injury, as he gets stronger throughout the season, maybe as he gets that break on Thanksgiving weekend, you'll see the Easton Stick from the first 6-7 weeks of the season return.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about Bruce Anderson, the leading ball carrier for NDSU on the day. 26 attempts for 78 yards, about 3 yards a carry, and a touchdown. What did you think about a grinding out performance for Mr. Bruce Anderson?
Disappointing a little bit. I thought that he would maybe play a little bit better in the kind of debut for him as a feature back. A lot of the issues I've had with Anderson's running this season cropped up again in this game, which is just with the added weight that he's put on and the different things they've asked him to do this year than he's done in the past. I think he's been really obsessed with just pressing the hole that he's supposed to go in, really powering and trying to run guys over. And I don't think that that's necessarily a terrible thing. But Bruce Anderson is an absolutely electric athlete and one of the fastest guys on the team. I really think that he's capable of doing a bit more and is maybe taking this A-gap situation a little bit too seriously, disregarding any cutback lanes, disregarding any chance to bounce it outside. I mean, when they're calling an inside run for him, he's going on the first read. And if there's somebody in that hole, instead of trying to make a miss, he's pretty much trying to push the pile, run a guy over, really only use the power tool in his kit. And he's an agile guy. He's an extremely fast guy. I would just like to see him do a little bit more with the ball in his hands. But as we mentioned, I mean, still excellent route runner. Easton Stick missed him on a touchdown. He, as far as I could tell, really held up in pass protection. I'm not, you know, trying to say that he was awful. I was a little bit more excited about really him stepping into that role of being a feature back and getting most of the touches.
Speaking of a guy who may have earned himself a little bit more touches in terms of what he put on tape against UNI's Ty Brooks, 7 carries, 59 yards, a touchdown. And again, you can go back and look at Ross's tweets. Ty Brooks had no issues bouncing it outside, making men miss. And on his touchdown run, he put a nice little, as Ross likes to put it, a dead leg there within the 10 to, you know, have a go from first and goal to a touchdown. What did you think of Ty Brooks' performance against the Panthers?
I was very impressed, and I think he really proved that he can impact the game as more than just a gadget player out of the three-back set or a jet sweep guy. He really proved that he can be that change of pace guy for Anderson, specifically if Anderson's going to play the King Frazier role and just bowl people over. I think Brooks becomes an extremely important member of the team at that point. I really like the way that he ran the ball, and I think he's only going to improve as he gets more and more experience going against, you know, kind of live rounds in these Valley games. But I was very, very impressed, and I thought you make a good point. Yeah, he is looking for cutback lanes. Not every time, but, I mean, the vision that he displayed I thought was probably the best vision of any ball carrier that day on either team. And I would argue that the yards per carry certainly would agree with that at any rate. I mean, that many yards on that few carries with two very explosive plays, that tells you all you need to know about the impact that Ty Brooks can have on a game.
All right, let's switch over to the defensive side of the ball, and I know this is a guy you really want to touch on because he looks 100% back, and that's Nick DeLuca, 7 total tackles, tied for the team lead, but 2 tackles for loss, 2 sacks, 2 forced fumbles, and a quarterback hurry. I think Mr. DeLuca looks healthy, Ross, but you are the elite NDSU mind. What were your thoughts on DeLuca's performance?
He looks great. He really does. He looks 100%. I had gotten that question a lot. You know, when do you think DeLuca will be fully back? Kleiman, I made a little bit of fun of it, but I mean, Kleiman was always giving those percentage updates. Link was about at 80%. We hope to have him 90%. Well, if he wasn't 100% on Saturday, FCS teams have a lot to be worried about because he was a huge problem. He was a force in the middle and an extremely effective blitzer. I don't know how many, I didn't go back and chart it. I don't know how many rushes he had, but I would be very surprised if it was more than 10 or 11. And to produce a hurry and 2 sacks with 2 forced fumbles on 10 or 11 pressure calls, that's unbelievable from a Mike linebacker, frankly. And the great part about it for NDSU is they recovered both of those forced fumbles. So those were splash, turnover, game-defining plays, and that's what I think was maybe missing from last year. Matt Plank did an exceptional job filling in for DeLuca and did an exceptional job filling in for him with Dan Marlette, of course, this season when Nick had to miss a little bit of time. But there's a difference between a good player and a great player, and I think we might have forgotten about that a little bit, just how great Nick DeLuca can be. And I really hope that that film that he put on there as well is good for his Sunday prospects as well, and just reminds people why at 6'3 and 250 pounds he was considered, you know, one of the best 8 or 10 prospects in the country going into his junior year.
And when you look at the NDSU defense being opportunistic on the day, I think if Eli Dunn never had to play NDSU again, he would sleep much better at night. He throws 2 interceptions, and NDSU forces 3 fumbles, 5 turnovers on the day from the defense. And this defense, Ross, continues to be extremely opportunistic.
Absolutely. You know, we discussed Eli Dunn on the podcast. I discussed Eli Dunn on the radio. Really felt like his decision-making in the game in Northern Iowa last year was questionable at best and did not markedly improve in this game either. I didn't have a chance to really chart all the interceptable passes, but I don't think he was particularly good from a decision-making perspective in this game. I thought that the one that he threw to Grimsley was probably not his fault and just an exceptional play by Robbie and an exceptional call by Coach Entz. But the one to Dempsey was brutal. I didn't even really think that Marquise Bridges was beaten on the play. I think he was going to be able to make a recovery there and make a play on the football. And not only does that happen, not only would that have potentially happened, but then you have a situation where Trey Dempsey's in perfect help position and makes what ended up being a pretty easy interception. But that's just one of the shortcomings of, I think, that you and I roster, is that the quarterback position is not always a net positive for them.
And 6 sacks on the day for this defense. Luke with 2, Caleb Butler with 2, Levi Jordan with 1, and then Derek Tuska with 1. I know that 6 sacks is exactly where we want to see this pass rush start to get, Ross. So what were your thoughts on NDSU being able to get home?
Very impressive. They did it with a little bit of pressure from the play calling standpoint. But even with four, I thought they were pretty effective. Really was impressed with Tuska. We had a sack. I took out video clips of two other pressures, drew a holding penalty. I think Tuska is, at this point, not a starter in name, but from perspective that I look at defensive ends, which maybe in the Valley isn't right, but I mean, I'm all about pass rush, pass rush, pass rush. He's the best pass rusher that they have from a just a strictly edge position standpoint. Derek Tuska has the most juice of this group, and that's an important thing moving forward, certainly, is going to be his ability to generate pass rush without a blitz call, without a twist, just straight up being able to beat the offensive tackle. It's going to be important, and he's getting better and better, I really think, each and every week.
All right, so I have two Jabril Cox questions here for you. One being, again, you can go and see the actual play. Again, it's on Ross's Twitter right now. I believe it's the last thing he clipped on the day. What were your thoughts on the targeting versus not targeting? And then from reading the comments in terms of people reacting is funny to me, and this is why you never read the comments. But I'm in the same boat, I think, as you are, that I have absolutely zero issue with Jabril Cox celebrating plays, because sports are supposed to be fun. I understand that some people like to do the Larry Fitzgerald method where it's act like you've been there before and never show any emotion, but it's kind of like bat flips in baseball. Some people hate them. Some people love them. I love it. So two questions, Ross. What were your thoughts on the targeting slash not targeting and kids having fun when they play games?
Well, I just didn't think it was targeting. I think I agree with the intent of the rule. I agree that football needs to be a safer sport, but there's a number of reasons I don't really like that's targeting. A secondary indicator of targeting is a defenseless receiver that was not a defenseless receiver. The argument is that then that the primary indicator would be the leading with the crown of the helmet, but if you watch that play, he leads with the crown of his helmet because he's disengaging from a block and he is stumbling. He did not have time to stand up before striking the offensive ball carrier. And that's just a what can you physically do type of deal. And if you do not have the intent and you cannot physically adjust yourself to raise your head and you hit somebody based on coming off of a block, that should not be targeting. Not only that, but then you just watch what he does in the play, and he executes a perfect form tackle. He grabs the back of the knees and drives and makes the play. He doesn't try to blow up the receiver. He doesn't try to get on SportsCenter. You can talk about, you know, whatever. You can talk about the celebration at the end. I have absolutely no issue with that. NDSU fans just as a whole, I mean, look at the demographics of the area. That'll tell you all you need to know. There's a lot of older conservative fans that don't like all the celebration and all the rah-rah, but I just don't have a problem with it. I think it's entertaining. I think it's within the rules, and especially when you have a guy looking, you know, at his own fans as opposed to what happened with the Davis taunting call, which was not okay, and I said as much, where you're flexing over an opponent. There's a big difference, and I have absolutely no problem with these guys showing emotion, especially defenders. I think defense is really, really hard to play and requires an immense amount of confidence, and I have absolutely no problem with him showing emotion after those plays as long as he's not showing up his opponent, which he seems to pay attention to not do, and then that's the right thing. But like I said, going back to that targeting call, I disagree with it because there was not intent. The reason that he led with his helmet was because he was coming off of a block that is very evident in the video evidence, and I, you know, the form tackle at the end of it I think really takes the cake as far as what he was attempting to do there, which was not harm his opponent, but just execute a form tackle after beating a block, and unfortunately for him and for North Dakota State, he's going to have to miss the first half unless I miss something in the press conference where they appealed that. But I believe he's going to have to miss the first half against South Dakota State.
So before we wrap things up for today, I kind of want to just give you a Missouri Valley perspective. And my question would be, I mean, we've been talking about the Northern Iowa Panthers this entire time. Are they done? They're 4-4 in the season. I mean, you look at losses at home to Western Illinois, NDSU on the road, Iowa State and Southern Utah with a 4-4 record, Ross. It's probably going to be looking pretty dicey for them to be making the playoffs anytime soon.
Yeah, I would say that at 7-4, you know, they would definitely make the playoffs, but I have doubts about their ability to go 7-4. I wasn't impressed with them that
especially
much.
With them facing the Fighting Chris Stravlers of South Dakota this weekend.
Right, exactly. And frankly, they've struggled historically with the Bison hangover. They have not played well following losses to North Dakota State. I don't see them being allowed into the playoffs at 6-5, and I think that 6-5 is probably where they end this season.
All right, so anything else before we wrap things up for today?
No, I'm good.
All right, so we want to thank you guys for listening once again. Again, we're very grateful that Ross was able to get that interview with Coach Richmond. You'll hear the next half before we preview the South Dakota State game later this week. You can rate and review us on iTunes. Check us out at thebisonreport.com, and we'll be back on Thursday or Friday to talk to you next. Thanks for listening, and go Bison.